I think so, because we use oil for different things. For example, for cooking purposes, I use olive oil. So it's mamish min
ha-mukhan. That's great, thank you.
The Bali Kabbalah say that there's a direct connection between Hanukkah and Purim, so I think it would be a very appropriate gift for
Purim.
Olive oil. Okay, then. So I'm both saying, what's on the agenda for today? I have three things on the agenda. One is to complete Rav Zevin's stories about Reb Chaim. A lot of them are very fascinating stories. But I think I'm going to leave that for last, because I'm afraid if I start with that, we'll never get past that. So I'm going to leave that for tomorrow, maybe. The second thing is to get back to the Brisker Rav, which Rav Zevin claims about the Brisker Rav, which I'd like to study with you, that he had a unique insight into Tanakh. That was a little bit of a chiddush for me. I never thought the Briskers were very interested in Tanakh. You know, Tanakh, when I was a child, you know, it was sort of passé. You know, now, Baruch Hashem, it's coming back into vogue. So what you have here, I believe, just tell me, I'm always confused about which pages I actually photocopied for you. But what I'm looking for...
344 to 347.
Well, that's all I did for you? Ah. Okay, so we need more photocopying, but let's just move on because the clock is our worst enemy. He says the following. In Parshas Yisro, which we just read yesterday, the Pasuk says, Vayichad Yisro, and Rashi says the name of Chazal, Nase Besoro Chidudim Chidudim. He, so to speak, got goosebumps. What do you call it?
Bumps.
Whatever you call it.
Wrong country. Oh. You're in the wrong country. Okay.
Now, why is the Torah telling us this? And the Brisker Rav has a fascinating insight into this. And from this we'll see how the Brisker Rav looks at a pasuk in Chumash. He says the following, that the Torah paskins in Shulchan Aruch, based on a sugya in Brachos Daf Nun Dalid, that you're allowed to be mevarech a bracha with shem and malchus, even for tovas chavero. So nothing happened to me, you know, like I have to bench Gomel, something great and profound happened in my life, but what do I have to you if you experience a great tova? And yet, based on this sugya, Yachol Adam, and this is in Simon Reish Yud Tes, if you're interested in where to find this, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that Yachol Adam Levarech Birkas HaGomel Al HaTova She'ira LeChavero. I've never seen this done, but that's what it says in the books. That's as I state in Shulchan Aruch. And the Ramah says, as a comment to embellish the Mechaber, Ein Zu Bracha Levatol, this is not a wasted bracha, since he personally didn't experience this great salvation, he's not obligated, but nevertheless he can make the bracha. He is blessing God and praising him and expressing thanks. So Ramah, the Taz, is going to pick up on this, adds two words, shesomach ba, means I'm happy because you experienced a salvation. Writes the Taz, Dafka kishe somach al zesh en isrape chavero o nitzal, that his friend was saved. Avlev eno sameach belibo, if he doesn't experience this simcha, again, that's always subjective how you define that, but he says that he wants to recite the bracha and tell everybody that, you know, Baruch Hashem, my friend, my friend got out of jail or he was healed. And why is he saying to him, if they are shalom, you know, he wants to be nice to his friend, is then ain li omro, he should not, says the Taz, recite that bracha b'shem u'malchis, v'havi bracha levatol. Says the Brisker Rav, that's vayichad Yisro. Because the Pasuk says, vayomer Yisro baruch yud kei vav kei. In other words, he mentions the name of God, baruch Hashem, asher hitzil eschem v'yad mitzrayim. What was the matir for Yisro to recite a bracha b'shem u'malchis? It's a bracha levatola.
So
Just because the Jewish people were saved from Mitzrayim? Elakevan shesamach, since he achieved that level of simcha, mutal lo levarech birchas hodah al tovas chaverim. But how do we know that Yisro reached that level of samach, that he had that simcha? That's why it says, Vayichad Yisro, nasim besaru chidud chidud. So again, Rabbi will say, you know, Shivim Panim LaTorah, you have to be very, open-minded and liberal to assume that that's why the Pasuk says, Vayichad Yisro. On a derech of pshat, Vayichad Yisro does mean, I mean, you can't deny the Brisker Rav, that he was happy about the fact that Kal Yisro was saved. But does that have to do with the fact that in the previous pasuk he recited a bracha? I don't know. But Shivim Panim LaTorah. So what do I?
The other way around.
Yeah.
Right. You should be vayichat first, then you should make a bracha.
Oh, so what does it say in the do me a favor if you can open up a chumash here. Because just to my luck, you know, we studied a little bit of Eov in my previous shiur. Oh, here,
Vayikra.
Oh, this Vayikra is not going to help us either. All right, so I'll get back to you, Sam, in just a minute. As soon as we open up Parshas Yisro, it's not hard to find because it's right there at the beginning of Parshas Yisro. No one hears Malkore, I guess. Yeah. That's not a chumash over there, is it? All right, Daniel went to get a chumash, so we'll take a look. But again, Rabosai, why do I mention this? Can you open it up, Daniel? Right there at the beginning of Yisro.
Sounds good.
It's not. This stuff happened.
No. It would be nicer if it was. If it, the sequence is the way I.
First Vayichad, then Baruch.
Oh, okay, good.
My
cousin
didn't use
Malchus.
Sorry?
My cousin didn't use Malchus. It was a shame without Malchus.
Oh, okay. but even shame, I mean, you need a heter for shame also. If it's a bracha, it says Vayivarech, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it says
No. It says Baruch
Hashem. Okay, so Baruch Hashem is Beloshim Bracha. But what's exciting about this Brisker Rav is that we'll see another few examples, and basically his approach was the Brisker approach to Tanakh. You know, it's not going to be, I don't know if anyone here by my introductory words was getting all excited, hyped up, that now we have a new Parshanut to the Brisker Rav. It's all based on, I'll give you another example.
What's the halachic aspect?
It's a halachic perspective on psukim, but it's cool because what it does is it answers up a question. I mean, it could be there are many other answers. You know, there are always many answers to a pasuk in Chumash. But just to look at the pasuk from a... So if you could open up to Parshas Lech Lecha, at the very end of Lech Lecha, Avraham Avinu gets the mitzvah of Milah. And it says there that Vayipol, when Hashem appears to Avraham Avinu to give him the mitzvah meal, it says Vayipol al Apo, I think. Do you find such a pasuk, Sam?
None of it. Yeah, Vayipol Avraham
al Panav. So the Brisker Rav, in order to explain this, he says the following, that there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch about an orel. An Orel is not allowed to receive the Shechina. In other words, if you're a Mahul, you can receive the Shechina. Now, many times HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avraham Avinu, and this is the first time it says, Vayipol al Apo. Says the Brisker Rav, because here's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the previous pasuk, gave Avraham Avinu the Tzivui Ad Mila. Once Avraham Avinu received the Tzivui Ad Mila, he becomes halachically an Orel. And if his arlus is arel, then he's not allowed to stand and receive the shechina. He has to fall on his face. And the Brisker Rav proves this from the parasha of Adam Arishon, that after Adam Arishon sinned, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, if you can open up, I think it's Perek Gimel in Bereishis, it says Vayishmas Kol Hashem Mahalach Bagan. Does it say such a thing? And it says he ran away.
I think it says.
Or something like that. So the Brisker says that after the chait of Adam Arishon, the erva became an erva, and therefore he can't stand in front of Hashem. That's halach and tefillah. Tefillah is always omid b'fnei Hashchina. So it says that he ran away from the kol Hashem because he had to vayischaveh. And then afterwards it says that God gave him the. The kosnos are right. What does it say in the next few psukim?
That's Hashem. The end of the pedic.
That's the end. It says Hashem. So the Brisker Rav wants to say that, you know, let's understand the psukim al pi derech halacha, that since it was vayishmas kol agon, you know, kol Hashem agon, Therefore, he had to cover up his erva, because that's a din in tefillah that you can't have your erva exposed.
But he wasn't commanded yet to do the bris.
No. You're talking about Adam Arishon. No, in Adam Arishon, again, I'm sorry if I'm... What I meant to say is that there are two different halachas over here. One's halacha of an orel, and then there's another halacha of tefillah of erva. You've heard the phrase, libo roas ha-erva. And the reason why Adam Arishon and Chava had to run away and hide themselves is because of the Kol Hashem Holech Bagan. And that's a din of tefillah, because the Shekhinah appears and you can't be mispal and be Oved Lefnei Shekhinah if the Erva is exposed. Until this point, it didn't have a din of an Erva. But now that it had a din of an Erva, is Vemela, he had to cover up his Erva in order to hear the...
He wasn't aware of the Erva because he hadn't been based on that.
Correct, because he did eat from the Eitz of Das.
He became aware of it. There was whatever it ever means.
Right.
There was
apparently there was no din of an Erev.
The Nochash had seen Adam and Chava.
Right. No, it's Hashem.
Because before, when Hashem speaks to him, tells him don't eat from the Eitz of Das.
Right.
He doesn't cover.
His Erev because it has no Chal Hashem din Erev. It's like the din of an Arel that there's no Arelus before the Tzivui of Mila. That's how a brisker rub sees perspective.
It takes the juice out of the story and makes him too dry.
Okay. Now, if you fast forward to Parshas Truma, it says there that Moshe Rabbeinu sends out the crews, declaration that everyone should come forward with their contributions to the Mishkan. So I think the pasuk says, maybe it's the second or third pasuk in Truma. It says, "We call Isha Sheyid Venu Libo Tikach as Trumasi." Tikhu as Trumasi. So the Brisker Rav wants to know what this pasuk is doing here. Why does the Torah have to get emotional here and tell me, "Isha Sheyid, Nod Varucho, Asher"? What's the pasuk?
Asher. Call Isha Sheyid
Venu Libo. Forget about Lid Venu Libo. There's a halacha in Hilchus Tzedaka. A lot of people don't realize this. Called Kofin Al Tzedaka. So you don't want to give Tzedaka, but Chazal. Or the Beis Din, I should say, determines that you have enough money to give tzedakah. It's kofin al tzedakah. We're going to force you, and if you don't come forward with this, we'll confiscate your property. And the reason for that is because the mitzvah of tzedakah is a twofold mitzvah. It's a chovas haguf and it's a chovas mama. And therefore, we'll come. So why does the Torah have to introduce Asher Yidvenu Libo? So the Brisker Rav wants to say a chiddush here. That the difference between this truma and the mitzvah of tzedakah is that in this mitzvah of truma there's no kfir. We cannot force you. And halacha of yidvenu libo is a precondition in this truma. So every other mitzvah of tzedakah is you like it or you don't like it. If you have the wherewithal, you have to cough up the bucks. But in this case, the Torah is mafkia by telling you only mikolasha yidvenu libo tikkak is trumasi. It's a whole new perspective on the pasuk in a halachic realm. The Rav wrote a famous essay, my Rebbe wrote a Rebbe, called Ish Halacha. The Brisker Rav, when he learns Chumash, he's the Ish Halacha par excellence. I wanted to add a little bit. If you open up the Rambam, in Perek Gimel, Mehilchas Talmud Torah, the Rambam says that Kol Mishi Yidvenu Libo is Lo Yasiach L'dayt V'Avero. And the Rambam goes on to say, and he's not Messiah Das from Talmud Torah. And then he quotes Vigisimo Yom. So the question that I wanted to ask is, what does the Rambam mean when he says Mishi Yidvenu Libo? In Perek Beis Milchus Talmud Torah, and in Perek Aleph Milchus Talmud Torah, the Rambam says that every Jew, Kol Ishmi Yisrael, Chayim Talmud Torah, Bayom Uba Laila. In other words, Vishinat Lemanech is not an optional mitzvah. In the case of Truma, the Brisker Rav says that for the Mishkan it was an optional mitzvah. And no one could be forced. You have to volunteer to bring forward your contribution. There's no kfir, there's no kofin al mitzvahs. It's Asher Yidvenu Libo. But in Talmud Torah, that's not true. So I wanted to say a pshat that if you look in Perek Aleph Milchus Talmud Torah and you compare it to Perek Gimel, there's one major change. The Rambam opens up Perek Gimel with a famous statement of B'shlosha Ksarim Nichtu Ben Yisrael. And the greatest of the three Ksarim, even greater than Malchus and Kuna, is Keset Torah. Then the Rambam says, "Kol mishi yirtzel lizkos bekesu Torah lo yasiach daito l'dvarim acherim." And the Rambam's language is conditional. Here, it's got to be voluntary. When the Rambam says lo yasiach daito l'dvarim acherim, that he's single-mindedly, exclusively focused on Torah, that's only mishi yirtzel nadvarucho lizkos bekesu Torah. So there are two halachas in Talmud Torah. One is the absolute standard uniform obligation that's objective and it's imposed upon every single Jew, and he has to be koveya min hayom min halayla. And then there's another level of kesed Torah, and that's lo yasiach daito l'dvarim acherim. You know, there's no room for the Rambam says if you want to look for ashirus, then you're not going to be zocher v'kesed Torah, and that's Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel is already an optional mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's called Asher Yidvenu Libo. Now, Sam, you made a comment, which I can relate to, don't think I'm coming to fight with you, that the Brisker Rav seems to make this very dry. But I want to add, and again, you might think I have an agenda here, without any agendas, that this Vart of Asher Yidvenu Libo is not dry at all. I'll tell you why. Because man is, in my humble opinion, again, this is just my Berzon talking, is obligated in two radically different types of obligations. And they should not be compared. One obligation is strict, legal, external. It's the Maisa mitzvah, and that's what you're obligated. Then there's another type of mitzvah, completely different type of mitzvah. And that means that man is in search of God. Man seeks out a relationship with Shechina. That's a whole different story. I'll give you a mashal. I don't know if you ever had this experience. Unfortunately, I had this experience. It's not a lot of fun. You get stuck without a place for Shabbos. Now, could you imagine the embarrassment of knocking on someone's door, and if I could use the Yiddish phrase, I would say, Ich bin du. I'm here, whether you like it or not. The best way is when somebody calls you up and says to you, you know what, I'd love to have you as a guest. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following, you want a relationship with Shechina? It's got to be Nod Varucho. I'm not going to impose myself and say, Ich bin du. I'm coming down from the seventh heaven, from the Zvul Hashvi, and I'm going to be mashing my Shechina here, and you'll build me a Mishkan. No. It's the Asuli Mishkan, Vishachanti Misochim. You have to take the initiative. If you want that close. You know, God says the following. From my perspective, I don't care. I can stay up here and you can stay down here. We'll have a very long distance relationship. Call me up long distance. You remember the long distance phone calls? They don't exist anymore. But there used to be long distance phone calls. God says, I'm okay with a long distance phone call. But you want a close relationship? You have to take the initiative. And that's what Kesed Torah is all about. You want to be Mukhtar B'Kesed Torah, which is a total transformation of personality. It's got to come from your initiative. You've got to be motivated. God says, I'm not going to impose that on you. I don't know, Sam, if you're impressed by that, but I think it puts a whole different spin on this. And it really divides up the Torah into two parts. I was always wondering, in tefillin, you could have two ways. You could put on the tefillin, wrap them, and take them off. Or you could wear tefillin the whole day. Now again, if he's wearing tefillin the whole day because that's what his father did, that's what his grandfather did, or that's what today there's a yeshiva in the old city that requires of the chevra, my grandson learns that yeshiva, to wear tefillin the whole day. So I say that this is what you call going back to previous generations, because my father's a father told me about his mother's father, who was the Rav in his town in Plisa. Not the Rav, he was the Malamed for the 60-year-old boys. He told me about him, that he never saw him without tefillin. So my father left Plisa to go to America when he was like 12 years old, and he was very close to his maternal grandfather. It was Mamasha, a Kesher Nafshi. And he said goodbye to his grandfather, he never saw him again. But he said about his grandfather, I can't remember him without tefillin. So now my grandson is wearing tefillin the whole day. It's going back to my great grandfather. So it's 30 minutes. So if you're wearing tefillin the whole day just because that's what they require, it's compulsory, then that's not a asher yedvena libo. But if a person really feels for tefillin, I went through this, you know, everybody goes through different periods of their life. I had a period in my life when I was about 18, 19 years old where I wore tefillin as long as I could. Yeah, I think back to those days. I was really firm in those days. I guess I outgrew that. No.
Fed into yeshiva.
Well, I only did it on Fridays because Fridays was a different day. Like there was no official structure. You could hide yourself in the library, and that's what I did. And I swear to film until about 1 in the afternoon. But I did it because I really felt it. You know, today if I would do it, it would be, you know, frumkeit. You know what I'm saying by frumkeit? Yeah. You know what frumkeit means. Frumkeit means either keep up with the Joneses or impress your neighbor or you're feeling guilty for being a Baal Tshuva, if you know what I mean. That's what I call frumkeit. Anyway, leaving out all those cynical comments, I want to give you another example that Rav Zeman quotes here. All the other examples I have, but he quotes this example of the Brisker Rav on Tanakh. And this is a parsha in Sefer Yehoshua. And as you all know, Yehoshua is divvying up the land of Israel after Sheva Shekimshu and Sheva Shechilku. And the pasuk describes a whole dialogue, psukim, long psukim here, in a dialogue between the Bnei Yosef, that means Ephraim Menashe, and Yehoshua. And Ephraim and Menashe are coming to claim that we deserve a larger portion in the land because we are not one shevet but two shvatim. And Yehoshua gives the Bnei Yosef a very strange kind of answer. It says that Yehoshua inflects, is that the word? I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. The same words that Yaakov Avinu had expressed to Ephraim Menashe, to Yosef in the brachas at the end of Parashat Vayechi, Bechor Shor Hodor Lo, V'Karni Re'em Karnov, Behem Yenagach Amim Yachtov, Afsei Oretz, V'Hem Rufos Ephraim Menashe. So this is the power of Ephraim Menashe. You know, these are very powerful people, you know, in military, on the military campaign. So the Brisker Rav has a whole new twist on what was going on over here. He quotes Rashi in Masechet Bava Basra in Yesh Nochlin on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. Rashi has an interesting shita. The Ramban disagrees, and Rashi's shita is Lo Hayu Hachalokim Shal Hashvatim Shavim. Not every shevet got the same expanse of land. What word can I use? The same expanse of land. In other words, the same. What do you call it? North, south, east, and west. Area. Ella, what do you say?
Area,
the same area. Ella, how is the land divvied up? Again, the Ramban is disagree with this. Lefi ribui hashevet. Notice it was per capita. It depends on how large the shevet was. Says the Brisker Rav, lefi zeh. Ma nechshavu Ephraim and Asher l'shnei shvatim. Notice they gained nothing, l'chora, because if everything depends upon the size of the shevet, so whether you call the Bnei Yosef one shevet or two shvatim, Ephraim and Asher, it's always going to come down to the same. So the Brisker Rav says that this is what Yehoshua was impressing upon these two shvatim. Chashivusam, the significance of doing two shvatim is in Hilchus Nisiyim, that each shevet has a nasi. Again, you have to know what the repercussions are of a minui nasi. Not only that, there's degolim. Each shevet gets its own degel. I don't know what the chashivus is that is, even. But that's beyond our discussion. So Yehoshua says that after Vayidabru b'nei Yosef es Yehoshua lemar madua, they came forward, nasata lonu gorol echad. So why did you give us one gorol? So they divided up amongst the 12 gorolos, the 11 gorolos, right? Because Levi wasn't part of the gorol. But so why do we get only one gorol? Vayomer Yehoshua el Beis Yosef. So Yeshua responds, Lefrayim Menashe lemar amravata. on the one hand, you're great in multitudes, but on the other hand, it says v'koach gadol lecha ki torishas haknani. Right, because b'char shar hadol of a karni reinkarn of, you are powerful individuals. So what was Yeshua's response to them? On the one hand, he was molded to them that you deserve larger portions because you are an amrav. You know, you make up multitudes of people. But on the other hand, he says, "Koach gadol lecha ki torish hasaknani." What's that all about? So the Biskor Rav wants to suggest that what Yeshua was telling the two shvatim is that the fact that you're two shvatim, that Yaakov Avinu had designated you as two separate shvatim, that's irrelevant to the size of your nachla. Because the nachla that you deserve is what you're going to get. Namely, because for an Am Rav, you'll get a larger nachla. But if, on the other hand, you're still feeling cramped, let me just read you the language here. Im tsar lachem amokom, even if after we divvy up the land in that way, you still feel you want a greater expanse of land. Because maybe, I'm just thinking out loud, that maybe if you have more people, then it's not enough to give more land per capita, but you still want to give us a certain space, a certain ravchus. Is karni re'em karnov, behem yinan bingokov. Meaning, Yeshua was telling them, nisbarachtem b'koach chazak. Lachem, tuchlu lichvosh es haknani. Go out there and conquer, you know, new lands. And as a result, you'll be able to expand your territory. Now again, Rav will say, I don't want to in any way, prejudice you about how to understand this, but it really does shed a light on Tanakh. Meaning, I know the skeptics, who study over there in that place, for the Tanakh thing. I'm not going to mention names, but they won't be impressed by this Biskor Rav, because they're going to say, well, you didn't use, all the literary methodologies and historical analysis. You know what I'm talking about. But you have to admit that the whole dialogue here is very confusing, because here they're coming forward and say, we didn't get enough of the chelik, we are two shvatim. And Yeshua responds by saying, yeah, you're an Am Rav. So you're Moedal Emes, right? So it sounds like he's saying, well, you're multitudes, and therefore your claim is justified. Why don't you get more of a territory? And then Yeshua turns around and says to them, you're powerful. Well, what's that all about? So the Biskor Rav has a unique way of, it's a halakhic perspective that they were claiming that we're two shvatim, and therefore we get two portions of the land. Then Yeshua responded by saying, no, two shvatim is irrelevant. Why? Because the land of Israel is going to be divvied up by the number of people that make up the shevet. So by the fact that you're two shvatim hasn't added a thing. The total number of people is the same, is identical to one shevet or two. The din of two shvatim is relevant to certain other areas, but not to Nachlas Haaretz. That's Rashi Shniva. And in the light of Rashi, Yeshua had to calm them down and said, "Imtzar lechem amakum." If you have a complaint to the complaint department, what is it called, those customer service, place. So then go out there. God blessed you with amazing power and expand your conquest of the land. Here's another example. This is from Sefer Melachim, Mamish, the beginning of Melachim. You remember that Adoniyahu was the son of David HaMelech, who stood up in rebellion against David HaMelech. And the question is, what's going to happen with the Malchus? Is it going to be given to Shlomo HaMelech, who's the chosen son of David, and the son of Bathsheba, or not? So the Pasuk says the following, that at the end of his life, David HaMelech takes a shvua. Vayishba HaMelech Vayomer Chai Hashem. That's always a lashon shvua. Asher podes nafshi mikol tzara, that God has saved me. Kasher nishbati lecha. I'm sorry. Kasher nishbati loch. Just as I have promised you in a shvua, meaning to Bathsheba. Ki Shlomo b'neich yivloch tachti. That Shlomo HaMelech will take over the Malchus when I die. And then it says, "Vatikod Bathsheba." She bowed, "Vatomar," and she declared, "Yechi Adoni Amelech David Liolam." The very famous dramatic statement of Bathsheba. So the Brisker Rav asks, why at this particular juncture, now Yechi HaMelech David Liolam? After all, if she wants to bless David HaMelech or bless God for Yechi Adoni HaMelech, why at this particular juncture? So the Brisker Rav quotes the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos in Sanhedrin. The Rambam says that there are 13 yesodos, fundamentals in our faith, tenets of our faith. The number 12 is that Malchus be Yisrael is only the base David, Umizera Shlomo Bilvad. V'kolacholek al mishpocha zos, if anyone declares himself a melech and he's not from this family, is kofar b'Hashem Yisparach u'bedivrei Nevi'ah. The Rambam goes very far, he's in denial of Nevu'ah. This, by the way, lends itself to the whole problem of Chashmonaim, because they weren't from David. The Rambam is very iffy, wishy-washy about the Chashmonaim. The Ramban, for example, is very opposed to the Chashmonaim having taken over the Malchus. Lo Yosef Shevet Yehuda Mefar. But anyway, that's a different story. Huh. So therefore, Mavuar, you see clearly from the Rambam that Havtocha Shenemer LeDavid, that when the Pasuk says, this is an earlier Pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, describes that Hashem promised David with a Shvua, Nishbati, that Im with David Achazev, I will not disappoint David, Vizaro li olam yia kiso kishemesh kinegdi, that his zera will always be on the kise, on the throne of Malchus. Havtocha zu nemra shetehe mi zera shlomo. The Pasuk says that it won't be just the Zer of David that will hold on to the Malchus, but if Daf can come through Shlomo. V'lo mizera David she'eno mizera Shlomo. Lachain, therefore, achrei she'David nishba l'bat shema she'shlomo b'no yimloch achrov, that his son Shlomo will become the Melech, despite all the claims to Malchus on behalf of other children of David. Amra, she declared, "Ata now at this moment, Yechi HaMelech David Liolam. Achshav Timoshech Malchus Beis David Liolam. V'af David Atzmo Romas Al Kach." He says, "Asher Pada Es Nafshi Mikol Tzara." Why at this moment is he declaring, "Pada Hashem, you have saved me from all disasters"? El Shekan Omad Lisrachesh Tzara LeDavid Atzmo. This is at the moment that Adoniyahu declared himself the king, is now there's a fear, a danger of Tuchali passing Malchus Beis David, because Malchus Beis David can only continue through Zera Shlomo. L'chein Omar, ki Hashem Asher Podes Nafshi Mikol Tzara, that God has in the past saved me from any Tzara, Yifdenu Gam Achshav, he'll be poda me even now from the Tzara of Adoniyahu Melch. And now the kingship will continue.
If Adonai would be king, it's still Zera David.
No, but it's not Zera Shlomo. I'll read to you the pasuk again. Listen to the pasuk in Shmuel Anavi. It says, "Achas Nishbati." God declares that I took one shvuah bekodshi with my holy name. Im leDavid Achazi, that I won't disappoint David. Zaro liolam yia kiso kishemesh negdi. On this pasuk, the Rambam writes in his Pirush HaMishnayos in Sanhedrin. Again, we're quoting the Rambam. Again, you have to know what the source of the Rambam was. That he doesn't quote here. She'ein melech liYisrael ela mibeis David umizera Shlomo bilvad. That's the language of the Rambam.
That Shlomo is implicit in that verb.
Right. That I don't remember all the details how that is. But what I'm just pointing out here is that the Brisker Rav sheds a whole new light on this dialogue between David and Bathsheba, in which she responds by saying Yechi Adoni HaMelech David Liolam, based on a diuk in the Rambam. But this is not just Stam Rambam, this is the Rambam of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, because the Rambam goes on to say that if anyone questions this Yisod and says that there could be Malchus from someone other than Zera Shlomo, is Kofar B'Hashem Yisparach U'Bedivrei Nevi'ah. A very, very harsh, extreme language of the Rambam. Now again, I'm not studying Yud Gimel Ikrim. I always wanted to give a clause in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, just nobody asked me to give it, so... Okay. That's this. Now, the second part of today's shiur is the pages that I gave you is Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. Rav Zevin dedicates an entire chapter in his Yeshiva Shitot to Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, who is the Rosh Yeshiva of Eitz Chaim here in Yerushalayim. And he has a long historical introduction, and he tells you that he was a youngster of Rav Zalman when he came to Volozhin Yeshiva. And he has a whole story here about the whole chabur of Talmidei Chachamim there in Volozhin. And amongst his group, his peers, were Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who was future to become the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka, Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich, who is the future Rosh Yeshiva of Kamenetz, and then Rav Avram Dov Kahana Shapiro, who is future to become the Rav of not Kovna, what's the yeah, of Kovna, right? Kovna and Slobodka were twin cities of Kovna. Did I ever talk to you about the Dvar Avram? Very fascinating personality. He was wild about my Rebbe. He wrote a letter about my Rebbe, which is unbelievable. And he wanted my Rebbe for his daughter very much. But the Rav had someone else in mind at that point. Anyway, so this was the whole Chabura. And the Brisker Rav told Rav Zevin that Bivalojin Rabim Hayu Ha'iluyim. There were many Iluyim in Volozhin. And he said some were called the Chatzi Ilui, some was called, there was someone who was called the Ilui Gadol, there was also someone who was called the Ilui Mitsuyan. He doesn't tell you who they were, but then he says there was the Ilui Shebi Iluyim, and that was reserved for Issa Zalman Meltzer. He was called the Ilui Shebi Iluyim, and Reb Chaim, he says, the Brisker Rav says about his father, that Reb Chaim said about Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer that when he opens his mouth, Kshu Posech es Piv, Niftachim li Tzinoros Hamoach, my brain opens up. You know, the vessels in my brain open up. And he goes on to say that the Alter von Slobodka decided that Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer was the choice decision, the candidate for the Rabbanus and the to establish a yeshiva in Slutsk. You know that the Alter von Slobodka was responsible for creating many, many different yeshivas. Even though the Rosh Yeshiva was Rav Epstein, the Levush Mordechai, but nevertheless, it was the Alter was the powerful personality, and he used to send out his talmidim to open up yeshivas in different places. You know, the yeshiva world as we know it today, the Litvish yeshiva world, is really a product of one person, the Alter of Slobodka. His influence was amazing. So he sent Rav Issa Zalman to establish the yeshiva in Kletz. You know, later on, much later, Rav Issa Zalman married off his daughter to Rav Aaron Kotler. And he took over after his shver as the Rosh Yeshiva in Kletz. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik used to call Rav Aaron Kotler the Kletzke Rosh Yeshiva. Because those who came from Lithuania, that's how they knew him. He established the yeshiva in Lakewood, so people called the Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva. But Lakewood was a very small yeshiva. When Rav Aaron Kotler died, there were less than 70 students in Lakewood. Today there are, I think, 6,000 or something. I mean, so my Rebbe used to call him the Kletzke Rosh Yeshiva. In any event, Rav Issa Zalman married a girl by the name of Frank. That was her last name. This Frank was a rich guy in Litha, and he married off every one of his daughters to another great Rosh Yeshiva. It's amazing, his support of Torah. In any event, he goes on to tell you about the chesed of Rav Issa Zalman, about his personality. He was a very soft and compassionate personality. But then he gets to his main purpose, and that is to understand Rav Issa Zalman's derech. And he says that one aspect of Rav Issa Zalman he thinks was absolutely unique to Rav Issa Zalman. And what was that? And he gives this example, which we're going to study today, Ritz Hashem. He builds his shiurim on proving that a particular machlokes, if we analyze it and we go down to its roots, has branches that go all over the place. And you can prove the power of this logic by seeing how the same Rishon will consistently maintain that understanding. Okay, that all sounds very abstract, but let's see it in flesh and blood. So what you're looking at here is page 345, and the left column, the last paragraph. This is a Rambam in the beginning of Niskei Mamon, Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph, and Rav Yisrael Zalman builds his entire structure, which you'll see is very complex, on one line in the Rambam. The Rambam opens up Nezikin, Niskei Mamon, with the following statement called Nefesh Chaya. So we're talking about live animals. Shehi Birshuso Shal Adam Shezika Habailim Chayov. And Rav Yisrael Zalman wants to know, what is the Rambam adding here, and why does he embellish it with the words Birshuso Shal Adam? And he says the following. This is all based on, again, we're not going to go through the sources, and the Mechilta, and the Bavli, and the Yerushalmi, and it's all based on this, and all these sources indicate Birshuso Shal Adam. And the Ravid, in his Hasagas at the beginning of Hilchas Mamon HaMazik, Niskei Mamon, disagrees with the Rambam, as we'll soon see all the different nafkaminas. Meaning, he's not willing to accept the Rambam Shita that all of Niskei Mamon is based on this concept of Birshuso Shalom. What did the Ravid think? Again, here you're moving on to page 346. And he says the following. That there are many cases where someone could be responsible for watching an animal, for protecting an animal, to make sure that it doesn't go out and damage, but it's not his animal. The Rambam, and the Ravid disagrees with this, the Rambam says, no, if it's Birshuso Shel Adam, if the animal is found located under his tutelage, or he's in charge of supervising the animal, then he's chayav in the nezakin of the animal. The Ravid says no. Is it his animal? Does he own it? Or does he not own it? And the nafkamina is going to be a shomer. For example, it's my animal, but I gave it to you to watch the animal. Again, there are the complications here, because what kind of shomer are you? Am I paying you? Am I not paying you? Etc. But the Rambam Shita is, which the Rambam develops in the fourth parak of Niskei Mamon, Shomer Kibaylim, that the Shomer now, puts on the shoes of the owner of the animal, Yado Kiyad Bailim, and the Rambam says that he's Chayav Ben Niskei Abeima. Even though, again, it wasn't a case where the Shomer explicitly took upon himself responsibility. He took upon himself responsibility vis-a-vis the Bailim to make sure that the animal is not lost, so he can return the animal. He never took upon himself, at least not explicitly, the obligation to watch and protect the animal to make sure it doesn't go out and damage. Do you follow that? Was that clear?
Is this a debate between Ram and Ram as the cloud, but the pratim they'll ever agree with? Because they all come from work. It's like a general rule we're starting with.
Well, not really. There's definitely an argument about the general rule, but there's halach l'maisa nafkamina in the case of a shomer. The Ravid is not going to accept. And any source that you'll find that a shomer is chayv in his zikin is because there was a double kabbalah sachrayas. The shomer had to explicitly say, not only am I responsible to you, meaning to the bailim and the mafkid, I'm also responsible to anyone who might get damaged from it. The Rambam says no. The very moment he becomes a shomer and he was kabbalah achrayas vis-a-vis the bailim, it's already considered birshuso. And the way Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltz understands it, this is the Rambam l'shitasa. The Rambam opens up by saying, "Kol nefesh chayish birshuso shel adam." Is habeimah omedes lirish birshuso v'chayav midin Torah b'nizkei habeimah, when the behemah goes out and damages. And what's the source for this? The Torah says shar ish, which means the shar of a person, shar shu kinyano shel adam. So the Mechilta says, "Ubinayim lo lichayav al shor she'eno shalo el ashar omed birshu." So this is going to be the source for the Rambam, and the pasuk says, "Shor ish v'lo yishmerenu shalom yishalom." So the pasuk adds v'lo yishmerenu, and that's lahavias hashomer. That's a ribui to include the shomer. And the way the Rambam understood this mechilta is that once he's chayav and shmira vis-a-vis the bailim, then the mela he's chayav and shmira vis-a-vis other people. Because again, the pasuk that the mechilta is basing itself on is shar ish, and the shar goes out and gores someone, and he has to pay for that. So we're talking about damages, not to the shar, but damages that the shar does to other animals. Is therefore the Rambam comes to this sensational conclusion that a shomer, insofar as the animal is birshu, so he's the only one who could be expected to protect the animal from going out and damaging others, he becomes chayav b'nezikin. He's like the bailim. The Malbim, for example, has a whole different understanding of this mechilta. The Malbim understands the mechilta to say that the Mechilta is telling you that even though the bailim, the owner of the animal, gave the animal over to a shomer, he's still chayav. That's what it means, lahavi shomer. That the pasuk of lo yishmerenu is referring to the shomer. It means that even though the shomer was the one who was negligent and didn't provide the proper protection, nevertheless, shor ish, shalim yishalim, the bailim have to pay. So therefore, this Mechilta may or may not be a convincing source of a car for the Rambam Shita, because the Rambam is saying against the way the Rambam is saying it against the Malbim is that this Mechilta is telling you that the Baal is parted from Shmira because he gave the animal over to a Shomer who's now responsible for the Shomer. Now Rav Zevin has his own comments here that he introduces based on a different mechilta to try to support the Rambam. Oh, so this is one machlokes between the Rambam and the Raifit. Now he goes on to another machlokes, which I'm trying to find here, the Gazlan situation. Where's this? Yeah, it's a case of Listim Mizuyon. So this you'll find on the bottom of page 346, based on a Rambam, again in the fourth parak of Nizkei Mamon, but not in the same place. And the Rambam says that a Listim Mizuyon who stole someone's animal is Chayev for Nizokin. And the Raivid disagrees. Says Rav Issa Zalman on 347, Machlokes Zushal Rambam Raivid. It's the same Machlokes as the Rambam and the Raivid with regard to a Shomer. Why? Because the list of the Zuyim is the only one who has possession over the animal right now. He's not the owner of the animal. The Rambam would say that it's Bershuso Shaladim and therefore he's Chayef and Ezekiel, and the Raivid disagrees. That's not where Rav Issa Zalman stops. He has another two Machlokes in between the Rambam and the Raivid, which he claims emanate from the same issue. And now we have the case in Hilchas Chiyah Matana Perek Dalid, Makabel Matana Shetan V'Yomar Zu Shetachas Yodi Eina Matana B'Yodi Ela Shomer Ani Oleha. In other words, at this point we think he received a gift and he says, no, I never got it as a gift, I was only given it by the owner in order to accept responsibility to watch over the object. Is Dvarav Kayomin? We accept his confession. V'nishba Shvuas Heses V'tachzor Lebaleh. And he has to take a Shvua. And then he returns the animal back to his Baal. So the Ravid says, Ryan Ruach, this is Ruach, this is like empty air. Well, what's the Shavuos Heses about? So he says the following. It's a case where this person who received a gift owes money to somebody else. He has a creditor. No, what's it called? A debtor, right? Debtor?
As a creditor.
As a creditor?
He's a debtor.
He's a debtor and he has a creditor. So the creditor now wants to take this away because he defaults on the loan, on payment to the loan, but he's saying it's not mine. He's saying I'm only a shomer on it. And the Ravid says in this case that... well, let's start with the Rambam. Haramam sovish shomer din bailus yeshlo shadover b'shusam who kibaldover, and there's such a thing called a nemonis of a baldover. What does it mean? If a person puts forth a claim and he has negiyah, so to speak, this is his claim for mammon, then he's considered a baldover. Why? Because he's claiming that he's the shomer, which makes him the owner, so to speak, of the animal. It's Birshusa. And therefore he should be believed with his taina. But the halacha is that if he wants to pater himself up from paying the creditor, then he has to take a shvua. The Raven, on the other hand, holds that the shomer has no din bailus. And if he has no din bailus, then what nemonis does he have? I mean, he's no different than anyone who comes forward and makes a claim. So maybe he has the status of an Eid Echad who's testifying against the creditor, this Balchov, that he doesn't have rights to collect this, it belongs to someone else. So that's only the testimony of Eid Echad. Now again, we have to know the laws of Shvuas Eid Echad. Shvuas Eid Echad only applies when there's no Muchzak against the Eid Echad. But here, if there's a Muchzak against the Eid Echad, then there's no Shvua. I'm sorry, I said it the wrong way. What I meant to say is that an Eid Echad will need, if my claim is supported by an Eid Echad, I'll be potter from Shvua if there's no Chazak against me. But if there's a Chazak against me, then I have to take a Shvua despite the fact that the Eid Echad supports my claim. Here's a case where there's no Muchzak against him, because Adarabba, the creditor is claiming I want to confiscate this animal. He doesn't have Muchzakis on the animal, and therefore, since the one who's claiming in Bezdin has the support of a Chazaka, he's holding on to the animal, he's possessing the animal, he should be believed when the Eid Echad supports his claim and says that he's not the owner of the animal. And therefore the Baal Chov has no right to collect the animal. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that his nemonus is not b'toras Eid Echad, but b'toras Baal Dovar, because if by his own claim he's the shomer, therefore he has the status of Birshuso. And once something is Birshuso, he cannot be believed as an aid, he only has the status as a Tovea, as a Baal Dovar. And if he only has the status of Baal Dovar, then he has to take a Shvua in order to support his claim. Now Rabbi Sazan wants to say there's another machlok between the Rambam and the Ravid, also about the same issue. Chometz b'Pesach. Okay, this is the Rambam in Perek Dal Milchus Chometz u'Matzah. The Rambam and Ravid want to know what happens if the guy takes his chometz, gives it to the Jew, and the Jew is a shomer on the chometz. The Jew never explicitly accepted achrayus, and the Akum forced it upon him and says, you must protect my chametz. He was an Adam Olim. Olim means Alimus. He had power. And he told the Jew that if this gets lost, this chametz, you're going to have to pay for it. So the Rambam says that he violates Bal Yiro Bal Yimotzeh in this case. He's considered like an owner. And the Ravid says, no, he doesn't have to destroy the chametz. He doesn't have any Chiyuv Achrayus on the chametz. Just the guy is forcing him to pay if it gets lost. Says Rabbi Zalman, this is the Rambam Lishitoso, says Shomer Yeshlo Din Bailin. And why does the Rambam say that he has to get rid of this chometz? Because he becomes the Bailim on the chometz insofar as he's a Shomer. Again, the point that we have to analyze here is why is he a Shomer if he never accepted Shmira? But in any event, once he has the din of a Shomer, which means he'll have to pay if the object is stolen, that's the famous sheet that Rav Shimon called Dabra Gorim Lamoman Kimoman Domi. Then if he has a din of a bailim, he violates Bal Yiro Bal Yimotzeh, and therefore the Rambam says he's got to get rid of this chametz. Elo she'eino chayev ad she'yelo gam zchus shel toeles v'oz hu motzui biyado l'chein tzorch she'chayev l'chrayis. Why is it he considered a bailim unless he gets some benefit from it? And the answer is he does get some benefit, because if this chametz is alive and well, he can use it to pay off the guy and return his chametz to the guy and save himself from any tashlumin. Umemela ain't avdel im uchayav bedin or bekfias ha'aku. It makes no difference whether you'll have to pay for the chametz if it's lost, because of the din, meaning he accepted a chrayis, or because the guy is going to force him to pay. His chiyuv of bal yirvah by matzah makes him into a bialim, because of the fact that if this chametz gets destroyed or lost, he'll have to replace the chametz by paying a sum of money to the guy. That benefit makes him into a shomer and therefore bialim. Mashayin came, but again, the Raivin Shita is that he's not a bialim, and therefore he's not chayiv for bal yirvah by matzah. According to the Raivin, even if I grant you that he's a shomer, but a shomer, although he has reshus over the chametz in this case, but he's not considered the bialim of the chametz. And therefore he says, kol ikar chiyuvo v'bal yiro mishum shechayv b'achrayis b'toros gorim l'mamon, l'chein enu chayv el k'shechiyuv b'achrayis u'min adin. When can you activate the principle of dovar gorim l'mamon kim mamon domin, and therefore achrayis gives you din of bailus, kim mamon domin, says if it's yours, that's only if I'll be din, it's gorim l'mamon. But here, what legal halachic right does the guy have to claim against the Jew who never accepted a chrayis?
I don't understand this davar gorim l'mamon kim mamon. I mean, this is a fundamental debate. What is ownership? I mean, right. This is all the way through Torah and Shas.
Yeah, I'm just saying, Daniel. Obviously, this has to be worked out. But what we want to do here is get a taste of what Rabbi Zalman's approach was. You know, he wrote 9 volumes called Evan Ozel, and this is a paradigmic, you know, shall I say, sample of what's in the 9 volumes, where Rabbi Zalman has 1 fundamental chakira, you know, with 2 opinions in the Rishonim. He's going to show that this spreads out in four different directions, and in every single case is going to be a machlokas, the Rambam and the Raivin, lishitasa. And that was not Reb Chaim's derech. In other words, Reb Chaim's derech would be to ask, what's the machayev of this game moment? Is it bailus or is it achrayus? And that would be a fundamental machlokas. But what Rabbi Zalman did, and you can either like it or not like it, is he takes the chakira and he shows you that the branches just stretch out over all of Shas. And over and over again, you're going to see a consistent machlok. So, B'li Neder, I want to continue tomorrow, number one, with Reb Chaim, because I told you he has a very interesting series of stories about Reb Chaim, which I feel I want to study with you. And number two, to go on a little bit in Rabbi Zalman Meltzer and see, you know, to what extent did he embrace the sheet of Reb Chaim in learning. Okay then? So thank you, and everyone should have a great day.
This Shabbos table call should be put away, don't you think? Oh.